You and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, March 27th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. I kicked off the show with my thoughts on a key election reform bill being discussed at the state capitol by many legislators, including Wolcott Republican State Senator Rob Sampson, Hearst Connecticut Media editor and columnist Dan Haar dropped by to talk about the hottest stories around the state, including Connecticut's latest population loss.
And again, I am completely befuddled, bemused, belittled. I don't get this. Or maybe I do. 203-333-9422. So 333-WICC. So late yesterday, right around the time that we finished up the program here for a Tuesday, a key committee that's dominated by Democrats pushed ahead some election law reforms, obviously in response to what went on allegedly in Bridgeport, allegedly with Wanda Jeter-Pataki in September, and then three rounds later, allegedly with somebody, according to allegations made by the Secretary of the State's office through the State Election Enforcement Commission, with somebody heading into round four between John Gomes and Joe Ganim, the second of two go-rounds for the general election after two go-rounds for the primary there. And both times this happened, what were we talking about? Drop boxes, video that saw people, according to the campaigns, the dueling finger-pointing, video that saw people, according to the campaigns and the police, you know, putting more than one video, more than one ballot into the boxes, which you're not supposed to do. Ballot harvesting is illegal. So, of course, a lot of the folks at the Capitol say, hey, we have to make sure this doesn't happen again. Well, I'm not so sure that I'm just not sure they're serious. I'm just not sure that they're serious. And it was a Democratic-controlled, dominated committee that late yesterday, after we were done, or around the time we were done, they voted in support, says here in the Connecticut Post, Ken Dixon's story of changes after Bridgeport election issues. Okay, interesting. Read it, scroll down, and here's the one I don't get. And let me tell you why. Part of what this bill would do would require towns and cities to provide video surveillance of ballot drop boxes. Okay? Did that help the first time around? You know, people still did what they did. Now, hopefully the law will contend with them. But let me put this in terms maybe you can better understand, right? Let's say you run a business, and you have a business that's got a number of doors and windows, right? And those doors and or those windows are broken into, they are violated by somebody who is stealing merchandise from your business, they're stealing money, whatever. And you try and put in an insurance claim, okay? You put in an insurance claim, and the insurance company says, well, we'll pay you once here, all right? We're gonna pay you once here, but you got to make improvements here, or you're not going to get insured. I heard this happen to a friend of mine who worked at a business. They had to figure out how better to park their company vehicles in order to not make them, you know, available or more attractive to crooks, right? So this is what I don't get. If we had any sense, which apparently we don't, and if you think I'm wrong, please try and correct me because I don't get this. We had two rounds. One was quite evident. The other one has been an allegation. We've had two rounds of people do funny business when it comes to ballot drop boxes, okay? Something that apparently prior to COVID-19, we never needed. So now we're going to keep the ballot drop boxes? What if this was a business? And your insurance carrier said, hey, we'll insure you again, but you got to fix those windows and those doors. This is too easy for some ne'er-do-well dirtbags out there to violate the system. And then you want us to pay? No. So again, and I know there are parts of this bill that on the surface seem good, and there are people who say, hey, this is good and that's good. But ask yourself, go ahead, seriously, ask yourself, why do we need the drop boxes? Again, when we never needed them, we never needed them pre-COVID. Did you hear anybody pre-COVID? Because remember, you could use absentee ballots. You just had to mail them. We had sort of drop boxes pre-COVID. They were known as the mailbox. They were known as the mailbox, or they were known as the city or town clerk's office. So we go through this funny business during COVID, and we have the alleged video showing, you know, we all know what happened in Bridgeport in September, and Lord knows if that's going to ever be taken care of legally. Now we have another round here. And some of the people in Hartford say, hey, here's the answer. Put video surveillance on the drop boxes. My answer or my question is, or my answer is, get rid of the drop boxes. Only in Connecticut can we look at something that was the centerpiece of some pretty apparent illegality and say, well, no, geez, we don't want to get rid of that because that may what? Again, it's like the insurance company. If you're a business and you have an insurance carrier going, hey, we're not going to write a new policy here unless you modernize your alarm system. You better secure the windows here. Hey, that window that they keep crawling through at the top of your business to break in, take out that window, seal it up with cement and bricks, and we're going to inspect it before we insure here. But I guess they think it's you know, riding the great white steed in Hartford means to provide video surveillance of ballot drop boxes. So ask yourself this, and I think you know what the answer is. With drop boxes being the focal point of apparently one, if not two rounds of alleged funny business in the last election cycle in Bridgeport, why wouldn't you say, hey, we didn't need the ballot drop boxes for 200 and something years in this state. We can do without them. What am I missing here? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Please explain to me why the drop boxes are necessary. Because they're not. We've used them for years and years and years. We didn't need them for decades, a couple of hundred years in this state. The mail, how about that? That's revolutionary, huh? The mailboxes were the thing to do, right? Yeah, that mail system. Yeah, prices go up every so often, but we generally trust them. The bill, if passed, would require towns and cities to provide video surveillance of ballot drop boxes. Now, do they mean, I don't think they mean, by the way it's being written here, I don't think they mean mailboxes. Is there going to be video surveillance? In fact, I would require video surveillance of city and town clerk offices. Maybe they do. Maybe certain cities and towns have that. But I just don't get. The only thing I can gather is that the Democrats in Hartford that control this committee, and by the way, lest you think I'm being too political here, The committee that pushed this bill is 13-6 Democrats. So if you think the Republicans have every voice here, because I know there's some people that always clap back at me on social media and say, well, you know, if the Republicans had any good ideas. No, they do, but there's not enough of them. There's not enough of them. So the committee has a 13-6 Democratic majority. So explain to me why those 13 Democrats would not say, you know what, Bridgeport was embarrassing. Great city, great people, hardworking people. Not to denigrate the hardworking people of Bridgeport who can't stand the garbage that circulates around the city from time to time. That's great. But we don't need these. We don't need these drop boxes. Now, I know you're going to have people say, well, people found drop boxes really convenient. Well, you know what? Mailboxes are convenient, too. Yeah. And if they're using absentees, city or town clerk's office is pretty convenient, too. You can, you know, you can figure out, or somebody can help you do that. See, here's the thing. There is a, and I don't know who it is, but when somebody votes to not get rid of the ballot drop boxes, that's kind of a, to me, and I know you may not agree with me, to me that's kind of a tacit wink and a nod, like, hey world, hey, you know what, that ballot harvesting, it helps. Yeah, it helps. Listen, hey, it goes on. What's the big deal? It's not practical that everybody who fills out an absentee can deposit it themselves. Well, if that's your thought here, there are other ways to do that by, you know, a set date where people in certain... Why didn't they do that, by the way? Why didn't this committee say, hey, let's do days of supervised voting, which can be done for facilities that have a certain amount of residents or patients or more. Why don't we expand that? Gee, I wonder why. Huh. Oh, you mean that would make ballot harvesting, which is already illegal, because that would make it more difficult. Oh, we don't want to do that. Look, I don't mean to sound like a jerk here. But again, I go back to the example I gave you about an insurance company. If you're an insurance adjuster, and maybe you, I've got a couple in the family, and they've told me from time to time when they go to the site of, you know, a fire or a flood or a break-in or whatever, you know, the first thing they do, they told me, a couple of my relatives, especially if it's a break-in or it's any sort of thievery going on, They tell the owner, hey, you know, we'll pay this time, but you got to make changes here because we're not in the practice here of losing money. But again, it seems that the majority in Hartford is reticent to come down a little harder and say, you know what, let's just get rid of these drop boxes. Because you know what, folks? We don't need them. I don't want to hear about voter convenience. I don't want to hear the D word, the disenfranchising word. Listen, if you got rid of these drop boxes, it might make it a lot tougher to ballot harvest, assuming people are, you know, interested in making it tougher. But maybe, hey, I'm just saying, maybe there are people that are okay with the law being broken. I don't know. This seems like a no-brainer to me. Joining us right now, Wolcott Republican State Senator Rob Sampson, who was one of the loudest and most passionate voices in a debate that went on into the evening last night in the key committee, voting 13-6 along party lines to move some proposed changes and alleged, and I say that with a tongue-in-cheek, alleged improvement in Connecticut election law ahead. We'll see what happens. Rob, it's Paul here. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Paul. Thanks for having me.
So I was following, you know, I had some information sent to me, and I'm reading all the stories today. So let's cut to the chase on the first, which I think is the biggest part of this, Rob. Am I reading this correctly, that there was a pushback by the Democratic majority to get rid of these drop boxes, and the only thing in this bill to increase that is video surveillance? Explain that to my listeners.
Yeah, so the Democrats have put together their response to the Bridgeport fiasco, and trying to respond to the many calls for improved security and voter integrity and restoring the confidence of Connecticut residents in our election process. And they put together this bill. It's a pretty lengthy bill. It's got something like 20 or 22 sections in it. But the only thing of any real significant substance is that they want to mandate that towns put camera surveillance on the drop boxes. I've been saying all along that the drop boxes themselves are a problem, and they're unnecessary. I mean, if you want to return an absentee ballot, you can do it by returning it right to town hall, or you could put it in a U.S. Postal mailbox. And the purpose of having the additional drop boxes is beyond me. And, I'm not suggesting that putting cameras on them is a terrible idea, although it hasn't really proven very effective. I mean, we know about what happened at Bridgeport because of the leaked footage, which is great. But it also doesn't seem like it stopped anybody either, since the three subsequent elections had similar irregularities.
You know, Rob, I mentioned earlier in the show, and I guess this was about as decent of a analogy as I could draw here. Let's say you own a business, Rob, and I know you have. I think you mentioned that, and you know, you have an alarm system, or you have insurance covering the business, and you get a break-in, and you get a break-in or two, and then after a while, Rob, you know, the insurance company or whoever carries you is going to say, hey, we're not going to insure you again because you have a window there that shouldn't be there, or your alarm system's not good enough. So this is kind of weird, Rob. Like, if this was the real world and we've seen these couple, three incidents that revolved around drop boxes, if this was a warehouse or a private business, you would either have to board up that window or fill the window with bricks or upgrade something to a large extent before any insurance company would want to deal with you. What am I missing here?
Right. I love this conversation because it goes right to the heart of the matter, which is that the issue is not the drop boxes themselves. The drop boxes are just the visual element that allowed us to understand what was going on, which is illegal ballot harvesting. And that is a direct result of the expansions of mail-in and absentee voting that we've passed in the legislature over the last decade. I mean, it used to be that, you know, the total number of absentee ballots is, you know, maybe 2% of an election, you know, a very small number. And again, you know, probably some problematic votes contained even in that number. But it was much less relevant than when you start to talk about having 10, 20, 30% of ballots coming in by mail. That presents real problems, especially in Connecticut, where we don't have the same protocol and integrity protections that other states that actually do a lot of mail-in voting have. Mm-hmm. You know, other states require photo ID, not just for in-person voting, but they also require that you submit a copy of your driver's license with your absentee ballot. They have a signature verification process where you register and actually record your signature in a very specific way. They capture it digitally so that when you send in your absentee ballot, they can match it up using a system to do so.
Sure.
We don't have any of that. We have nothing. And our voter rolls are a mess. You know, the voter rolls contain a lot of people that have moved on, passed away. You know, they're registered in multiple addresses in multiple cities. And we saw all that during the pandemic when the Secretary of State mailed out absentee ballots to everyone. And then you got people receiving 10 of them to their house for the people that used to live there and, you know, the neighbor's dog. And I mean, this is unbelievable stuff. And they've done nothing to address it. So I spent yesterday saying, look, I appreciate what you've done in talking to the Democrats. And, you know, I'll support your limited attention to this issue. But don't try and convince the people of Connecticut you actually did anything. So I put forth six amendments in a row to actually solve the problem. Fix the voter rolls, audit Election Day registration, audit absentee ballots, require signature verification, require photo ID, get rid of the unsolicited mailing of the ballot applications. That's the biggie.
Yeah.
And then, of course, put some penalties in place, real live penalties, mandatory minimum sentences for people that actually do violate election laws. And, of course, they voted them all down on election law on a party line. And I want people in Connecticut to know that that's the case. They have no interest in fixing the problem.
Yeah, and Rob, and the guest is Wolka GOP State Senate member Rob Sampson. I mean, Rob, the stuff you mentioned, and especially I'm glad you highlighted something, Rob. You know, people call me all the time and say, well, you know, Paul, if you'd look, yes, I know, other states have mail-in voting. But, Rob, and especially now with the chance that we may go with, you know, no excuse absentee balloting come, you know, an amendment, and that's going to be basically mail-in voting. You know, I point out to these people who call me, Rob, and email me that, yeah, these states do it, but they take several years. They put together, as you say, stringent measures like signature verification. As you say, they voted all those down with you yesterday. And what are the chances any of these, Rob Sampson, would be even remotely considered if we go with no excuse absentee ballots?
Yeah, I'm not seeing any signs the majority has any will to do this. I've been proposing these as bills, as amendments, going back probably 5 or 6 years since we started this, going down this road of no excuse absentee voting. And certainly during the pandemic, when you had the major shift, and I mean, that's a whole conversation by itself, but that's when we really started down the road of doing huge amounts of mail-in voting in the state. And some of us who actually know the system inside and out are like shaking our heads. I'm like, how can you do that? We don't have any of the mechanisms or protections that other states that do this. And you see what happens. You see that the people that know how to exploit the system are doing so. And it's a real shame when you consider that so many legislative seats, municipal seats are decided by relatively small numbers. In the town of Southington, right inside my Senate district, one of the state rep races that I overlap with, decided by one vote last time, one lousy vote. And you're going to tell me that every vote that was submitted by absentee was legitimate?
Yeah.
Nobody filled them out for their kids away from, in college. No one filled one out for their elderly parent. Of course they did, you know, and that's the problem I have with all.
And Rob, let me ask you something, and you can answer this if you, I'm not going to put you on the spot here, but look, we all know, and I've been following the folks in the General Assembly for 40 years, and members on both sides of the aisle can differ on things, right? You and I both know that. But sometimes, you guys and gals, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, you talk, and you talk frankly, and you talk off the record and on background. I'm sure you do, and which is why I could never serve up there with you guys and gals, because my head would explode. But does anybody ever allude that, like, from the other side, well, you know, I kind of, yeah, this does make sense, but I really can't vote for this. Like, this can't be a no-brainer for everybody. I mean, some people on the majority side must support some of these things, or am I wrong?
Right. Well, I don't want to speak for anybody else. And
okay.
Certainly there's different opinions, but I don't disagree with you. I mean, these are common sense measures.
Yeah.
These are policy decisions that have been made in a bipartisan fashion in other places. The Democrats in Connecticut know that this system works to their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line, and they're not about to change it. And the proof you have of that is that you have individuals, and I won't mention their names, but you can figure it out, but you have somebody serving in the state Senate right now as a Democrat who actually ran for mayor of Bridgeport against Mayor Ganim and lost that election, made the same allegations that Gomes made. But last year when I offered many of these same changes on the Senate floor during the special session, right after the Bridgeport video came out, they voted them down. And it's inexplicable to me. I'm like, they clearly believe that while this might be a problem in their local primary disputes, they recognize that there's a benefit when it comes to statewide, combating the Republicans. And that's why they won't change it.
Yeah, and this has to be, and again, Rob, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I said this earlier in the show. As you said, this has to be somewhat of an effort to tilt some of the, not necessarily the mayor's races, although it was tried, but the big city mayor's races are generally won on larger margins. But as you say, especially in the state house, now the Senate districts are different, but, you know, these house races are decided by 150 votes, one vote, like you said. So, you know, wink and a nod, maybe. I mean, what is the point of keeping the drop boxes? I don't understand it. We have drop boxes. They're called mailboxes. I mean, I just don't get this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that the original reason for drop boxes, there's free federal money. We have to spend it on something.
Yeah.
And I think that's where they came from as a initial reason why we're keeping them is beyond me. And now, you know, the fact of the matter is a lot of these towns didn't want to deal with the drop box.
Yeah.
Now you've got to find a mechanism to make sure that you are emptying these drop boxes at a certain time of day and that you're maintaining the custody of the ballots. It's a security concern, period. And now we're going to add to that for the towns. I mean, so I have mixed feelings about the bill altogether, which is I don't really like the idea of putting another mandate on the towns, all 169 towns, not just big cities that, already have cameras in place for a lot of reasons. I mean, I think in Bridgeport, I don't even know if that camera was, placed there for the drop box. I think it was just a camera that happened to be in the area that they aimed it at the drop box. But you're going to take small towns that have, very limited number of people actually voting and dropping things in the drop box, towns that have like a 2,000 population. I mean, how many votes are going to go in the drop box, So they're going to have to invest in cameras and, maintaining this footage and making it available. I mean, it could be a big expense for a small
town. Sure,
sure.
And finally, Rob Sampson, are we sure, I guess you're never sure up there, but are we sure that both the House and Senate will take up this bill, or might there, because there are some good things I saw in this bill. Might the bill be not palatable to some folks up there when they say, nah, or is there just too much of a spotlight on this?
I think the bill will go.
Okay.
I think that the Democrats, their purpose behind this is to do something and to be able to make the claim that they address the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really want people to understand that, yes, I don't disagree. They're doing something, and I can agree with a lot of what they're attempting to do here, but it doesn't go anywhere near actually solving the problem. And I don't want them to get away with claiming that they have, because this is not going to fix anything. It's not going to change anything substantially. And I'm going to continue to press for my amendments. We're talking about maybe having a press conference early next week to talk about this. Because the only way this changes is if you change the makeup of the legislature, which obviously can't happen until there's another election. But the only way it could happen this time is if there was enough public outcry. So I'm trying to get people interested in actually, pressing the Democrats to do the right thing and solve this problem once and for all.
GOP State Senator, Wolcott State Senator Rob Sampson. Rob, always good to have you. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much. Always my pleasure.
Appreciate it. Rob Sampson there. Our weekly midweek check-in with Dan Harhurst, Connecticut media editor and columnist. And Mr. Har, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. Everything good?
Everything's good. And I want to start off with something you teased, Dan, as we wrapped up last week. You were putting the finishing touches on it. I talked about it the next day on the show. And it was this great story, Dan, about how there seem to be some people, although nobody's raising their hand, that want to get rid of the prohibition that many states have, Dan, on betting legal betting, which is prohibited on state colleges and universities. That was a great story. Very fascinating. Have we found out in the week, Dan, where this came from?
Came from this House Speaker. House Speaker Matt Ritter. He was working on it, not alone.
Yeah, that's
he
what
was
I
working
mean.
On it with other people, and it turns out that several things are happening at once. The law has been in effect for 3 years, and in those 3 years, the world, in the opinion of people who favor sports gambling, the world has changed. It's become more pervasive.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the argument is that college students are doing it anyway. The protection, the idea was to protect UConn students and sports players, mainly at UConn, but also Yale.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Yale won a game in the NCAA tournament. They are a bettable team as well.
Yeah.
So the thinking was, it's become more pervasive. Nobody discussed this. This wasn't in a bill this year.
That's what I meant.
Didn't come up. There was no bill. It got stuck into a related bill after the sort of public hearing time, and it was considered to be okay for putting in because there had been a general discussion about sports betting, and so the rules say that you can't pass a bill unless it's had a public hearing.
Yeah,
but those are similar rules to I don't know, you can't drive over 55 on the highway.
Yeah.
So,
but you had written in that story, Dan, apparently, and I don't know whether things have changed, please tell me, that, well, UConn wasn't saying anything, the casinos weren't saying anything, consumer protection wasn't saying anything.
None of those entities asked for this.
So who tugged? Did this come in a late night hot flash from Matt Ritter, or was somebody? I guess the question I have, Dan, is who was whispering in Ritter's ear?
Well, when I said UConn, there's UConn and there's UConn. Institutionally, UConn didn't request the bill.
Okay.
Discussions happened, and it was decided at some point that, well, gee whiz, Gamble Pavilion is getting old.
Mm-hmm.
It dates to the 90s, yep. The 90s, as you know, and the 90s are not yesterday. And we're going to need to spend $60 to $100 million fixing up Gamble Pavilion. And where are we going to get that money? We can't even get money for lab space, for classrooms, for professors. Where are we going to get money for $60 to $100 million? Well, how about if we have a dedicated revenue stream from something related to UConn? How about sports betting? And so the thinking was, if we can get a revenue stream of, say, $3 million a year, then you can borrow easily $60 or $100 and pay it back from that revenue stream. As it turns out, the additional revenue from sports betting, I mean, look, last year in the entire year, sports betting, all of it, not just on college teams, all of sports betting yielded Connecticut $18 million.
Yeah.
Right? So could there be an extra $3 million from in-state sports? Maybe, but probably not. Right? So it's not a huge ticket item when you consider that the lottery yields Connecticut $400 million a year. Right, that's the big money is in lottery games and online casino games, not sports betting.
So was the fear, Dan Har, then gone? You know, the original reason, hey, we don't want to do this. Other states say, well, because, you know, they're college kids, and legal or not, you know, we don't want somebody coming up to the kid after he leaves the gym and say, hey, you know, next week's game, we're not telling you to lose. We're just telling you to miss a few shots, cover the spread. Is there no fear of that anymore or what?
Oh, there's a fear in me. I think the whole thing has gone amok.
Yeah.
And it's first of all, you have gambling addiction. Second of all, you have college kids who are going to feel pressure to gamble. Look, if you're sitting, I get that it's pervasive.
Yeah.
But if you're a kid sitting in a dorm, right, and you're trying to study for your, what subject should we do? Let's do Egyptian poetry.
Okay.
Right. Egyptian poetry.
I missed that one when I was at BU, but go ahead. Yeah.
No, I don't know. I took a lot of Egyptian poetry myself. I was a minor in it.
Okay.
So you're studying for your exam, and it's one thing to say, yes, it's pervasive, and you can log on and bet on UConn on any number of illegal sites, or you can jump in the car and fly up Route 32 to Munson, Mass, or wherever, and place a bet. I get it. But it's not the same as if you have your DraftKings or FanDuel app right in front of you and UConn is playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be fair, the speaker did tell me that there was no countenance of there being in-game bets. That's right out.
Yeah, the prop bets. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he used that word, prop bets. I'm not a bettor, so I don't know that word.
Well, it's a proposition bet. In other words, in-game, Dan, you get these messages, you know, maybe the second half. Is Tristan Newton over under 35 points to finish the game? And you can make kind of a flash bet right there.
Right. The other reason I don't like it is that it's really harming sports, right? It's bastardizing the game to the point where people are no longer fans of the game. I get it. Of course, in the NCAA, they are fans of the game. And at the college level, they are fans of the game. But at the pro level, I was sitting at a counter at bar in New Haven watching a Celtics-New York Knicks late season game with playoff implications for both teams a couple of years ago. And it was a like tie game with 40 seconds left. And there was another guy at the bar with me, and we're yelling and screaming, and we're Knicks fans.
Yeah.
And R.J. Barrett hits a three from the corner, and we're jumping up and down, high five. Knicks up by three with 30 seconds left, and he walks away. And I turned to the bartender. I said, what's that about? He says, he had R.J. Barrett for 25. He's done.
Yeah.
That to me is not sports. That's not the spirit of sports.
Absolutely. Dan Haar, the guest. Dan, you wrote a very interesting piece, too. I read it interesting about something that's always bandied about, Dan, population trends, who's moving into Connecticut, where are they going when they leave, where are they going. Brief us on that.
Well, they can come and buy my house in West Hartford if they want. I'd have to kind of clean it up a bit.
Yeah, but you'd probably make money, right? I'm sure you'd come out on the high side, right?
Yeah, but how high is up?
Okay.
You know, you get accustomed to expectations in
okay.
this world. That's what the economy is all about.
Yeah.
But when you look at demographics and when you look at population change in Connecticut, two things there is no question. One is we were losing people before the pandemic at a rate of about 20,000 a year on mm-hmm. average to other states, right? Now, some states sent us people. New York would send 6, 10, 12,000 people a year to Connecticut.
Yeah.
New York has always been a net people move from New York to Connecticut. Massachusetts and New Jersey is sort of a wash, right? But for New York, for the rest of the country, New York was no question losing people for those years before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Also no question that during COVID, people moved into Connecticut. Of that, there's no doubt. We know that. What the question is what happened after? And what we thought was happening and what the governor was saying was happening was that the moving vans have turned around, the mojo is back and all that stuff. And it turns out for the last 2 years, we have now 2 years of data.
Yeah.
Connecticut has lost a net 9,000 or 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you understand these are sampling numbers, so they're not precise.
Yeah, sure. Right? Sure.
But when you get 2 years of data, so that raises the worry, are we headed back to our old ways? And the hope is no, we are not. And we know that we feel better. We know that a number of people came in. We know that tax collections are up.
Mm-hmm.
We know that population is up because the numbers leaving are less and the numbers being born versus dying and foreign immigration. Very important that we get more immigration.
Mm-hmm.
I get that there's a border crisis, but the border crisis aside, this country and this state desperately need more immigrants of all stripes, that is professional engineers as well as lower paid workers. That's everything. And there's no question about that. So where we're going is still a mystery, but it isn't quite the picture that we thought because we had a deceptive point last year when 57,000 people moved in 2022. That turned out to be wrong. That was in data error.
So what you're saying is the 9 or 10,000 is not, you know, a holy crap red light thing here. It's not insignificant, but it's not the end of the world.
New York had 275,000 people move out when we had 9,000 move out. New York is about six times bigger than Connecticut, so you do the math. New York's got a much bigger problem.
All right, finally, I love this story. Now, what is this? People flying from Texas to come up and to come up and have like something that I've been doing for 55 years here, having Connecticut pizza. What's up with that?
Well, wait, you have Connecticut pizza because you're in Connecticut.
Well, yeah,
but what I'm saying is that Avelo, the airline that's flying out of Tweed,
yeah,
started. They're expanding. They announced a new flight again today to Central Florida, some
mm-hmm.
airport I never heard of. God bless them. But our friend Tom Dutchick with CP Capital Report posted a story about a columnist in Houston. It wasn't the Houston Chronicle, because that would be Hearst, but it was some columnist somewhere in Houston who wrote a column that said, hey, Houstonites, or whatever they call themselves down there, get on a plane and go to New Haven.
Wow.
It's a Monday and a Friday flight. So you have to stay 3 days, and you can get a boatload of pizza. And he suggested Sally's, Pepe's, and Modern.
Yeah,
you know, those are three good places, great places. And he's thinking that pizza tourism would be a thing for those people in Houston. Is their pizza as good? Certainly not. We've got the pizza. So the question is, how do I reciprocate as a columnist?
Yeah.
And how do I tell the people in New Haven what they should do in Houston?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do, Dan, and I don't know exactly how high you are up on the food chain there at Hearst. I know you're an editor. I get that. I think you need to go with the powers that be, especially whoever in the office handles business expenses when you turn them in. And you need to fly down to Houston. You need then to fly back up. on that Friday flight and fly back down on Monday, so you can really do kind of a first-person story, Dan. Immerse yourself in these Texas folks coming up, and I think it'll work out well. You get a little vacation. You could school them on Connecticut pizza. What's to lose? You like my idea?
How about I do it at the end of August? It's still the heat of summer, and it's hurricane season.
Yeah.
What do you think?
And then you could write two more stories.
Now, you remember, of course, speaking of the NCAA Final Four,
yeah,
that the governor went there last year and said that this is, what did he say, a godforsaken
place, or something? God. Oh.
And I think I had I wrote a column about that.
Yeah, you did.
Often I write columns that are just in my head, and I forget whether I wrote them or not.
All right. Dan Haar, great stuff. Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, have a great weekend. We'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
Great weekend of basketball.
Yeah. Go Huskies. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.